Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctical.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
This is a volunteer organization. That's what makes it so good. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions, and the Donalana Kitchen gets by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donalana Kitchen is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led, nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmers.org.
Thank you for joining us today around our kitchen table. Well, Donna, be careful what you wish for. A couple weeks ago, things were so dry around here. We said, well, we could use a little rain, we said, and it did.
That's the thing about the weather. It always changes.
It certainly does, and boy, did we have it. The rivers are up. I live on a small creek that runs through our farm.
The Onion Creek.
And the term raging torrent is seldom used.
Well, you've got a lake in your backyard,
We do. It's every now and then that happens. Not every year, but it does.
You know, we have some funny little rivers around here. We've got Skunk River, Squaw Creek, Onion Creek.
Yeah. Clear Creek.
Clear Creek, which is probably not clear, right?
Not this day. Yes, it is. It's summer in Iowa. There's heat, there's humidity, and there's mulberries. The pie cherries are coming on the trees. Strawberries. I picked a few strawberries. Elderberry umbrals are coming. Oh, it's so nice. So we're going to consider different things today. You know, we eat a lot of things, but it's not so simple to eat food these days.
Oh, yes. We're going to have a very unhappy news show today. So just settle in there and get ready for this wet blanket.
Well, wet blanket. All right. We find out that all sorts of scary things are going on with the ingredients in our food. There's the additives, the pesticides, and we find out plastics in our food. Maybe we should be a little cautious and think before we bite. Plastics and salt. Donna, what's this about salt
anyway?
Well,
there was, you know, it's what was Ocean's Day fairly recently, so there was a lot of talk about, you know, the acidity of our oceans and the rising oceans and the polluted oceans and da-da-da-da-da. And there was an article, and this, of course, pertains to food. The headline was, sea salt contains an alarming amount of microplastics. So sea salt, as opposed to mined salt, which is, you know, what most common table salts are made out of, sea salt is evaporated ocean water. So as they evaporate it to create the sea salt, which is highly prized usually in culinary circles, whatever is in the ocean gets evaporated into the sea salt. So what's happening is our sea salt now contains microplastics. Yum!
Well, this probably is not so good for us. It's salt.
We all eat salt unless we have hypertension or something.
Right.
So with us today, we have Carolyn Raffensperger, our own Carolyn, who lives here in Ames, but she is a nationally known environmentalist, and she is the founder and executive director, I guess, of the Science and Environmental Health Network. Welcome, Carolyn.
Thank you. Oh, I guess we created that name just to see if people could say it while, you know, if they were sober.
Even sober, I trip over it. Somewhere it's stuck in my brain with the wrong order of words or something. Anyway, you get the idea. She's talking about science and the environmental issues and the science in the environmental issues and how it affects health. There we go, right?
There we go.
Okay. So she's going to talk about plastics in our environment. It's a sad story, Carolyn.
It's a sad story, but the good part about it is you can do something about it. We can do something about it. And knowledge is power. So part of what I hope to do today is describe the problem and not leave you with a sad story, but leave you with enough knowledge to take action to protect yourself, to protect your family.
And your community.
Your community.
And your planet.
And the earth. And the reason for doing that is really your body is the earth, and your earth and the earth is your body. They are inseparable. The water that you drink, the food that you eat, the air that you breathe, all it's this reciprocal relationship with the earth. The
earth, we are interdependent, as we would say.
We are interdependent, and the earth is so integrally tied to our bodies. We are the earth.
From dust to dust.
And in this case, plastic to plastic.
What this plastic in our salt, should we be worried, or is that just part of the earth?
You should be worried, partly because with this experiment that we've run using fossil fuels, both to create climate change, burning of fossil fuels creates climate change and has led to this disruption of things like the water cycle. Too much rain in Ames right now. It appears tied to climate change and climate disruption. But the other fork of those fossil fuels has to do with the manufacture of things like plastics. And with
I think people don't stop to realize that all this plastic stuff is made out of petroleum.
And there are many, many different kinds of plastics. It's one of the things we don't think about. So we recognize plastic, but
like
styrofoam.
Forks and plates and cups and.
Right. And the other kinds of things like polyesters and nylons and fleece are actually also plastics.
Fabric plastics.
Vinyl. Vinyl siding on your house, vinyl flooring in your kitchen.
Nylon carpeting.
All of those things are actually made out of fossil fuels and are a form of plastic.
My goodness.
Upholstered things, your couch, your...
Yep. So you asked Alana whether we should be concerned about this. And the fact is that we've actually altered the biochemistry of our bodies using plastics and especially plastics. What they did was add certain chemicals that had never been known on the planet before in creating these synthetic molecules. And they added...
Like the plasticizers.
The plasticizers like BPA, bisphenol A, or...
And these are what... Correct me if I'm wrong, because you've got the science going on. It's what gives different qualities to, like, some plastics are hard and some are soft and flexible and some are like more like rubber and other are more like wood, like being the operative word.
Right.
There.
So there are a number of those, and I mentioned one, bisphenol A, but phthalates are another. And these actually will leach out of plastic containers, the plastic water bottle. So consumers actually change the composition of things that are used by babies and water bottles. You can now,
and in children's toys.
Right. So you can go to the store and you can actually see labels that say BPA-free.
BPA-free, right.
Consumers actually won that.
Like baby bottles no longer use
right.
it mostly. Yeah.
Right. So the chemicals in those plastics leach out.
Which move. I mean, they look inert, but they're not, right?
I didn't understand that.
The plastics move. Like if you have a baby bottle and you put milk or juice in it, the plastics in the baby
right,
bottle can
right.
migrate into the food.
So the problem is, especially if you put hot foods in it or if you microwave in a plastic, and if you have highly acidic foods or foods that have fat, you do not want to put those foods in plastic.
Ah.
So there are alternatives to those plastics. And
Like for food containers, glass.
Right. So I had actually raised most of my food, and some of you know that my husband and I farmed in North Dakota before he took a job at Iowa State. And when I was in North Dakota, I raised everything except my own poultry and dairy. I raised popcorn and sweet potatoes. I was almost a rival for Lana and on their farm, but I put up all that food because we live in a climate where we don't produce food about 6 months of the year. So I had to store it somehow, and I stored it in plastic, froze it in plastic, and did not pickle things and can things in plastic. It's a good thing. But by the way, canning lids had BPA in them, and they've taken that out. No.
What was in the rubber seal?
It was in the rubber seal.
The rubber seal, which was not rubber, right?
It was a. Yeah. It's a plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And so we switched over to primarily glass.
When did they change the canning lids? Should I throw away all my old ones?
I don't know. No, no, because you're not using them to can anymore. You know, I'm assuming you're not using them in a heated. You would buy new rings. You would buy new lids if you're canning anything from. New. I don't think it's a problem if you put the old ones. They're not touching any food. But there are things like that that if you start to pay attention, you'll discover first that there are more plastics in your world and in your kitchen than you know, and two, that there are alternatives. So my invitation to you is to be a detective in your kitchen and look at the things that you're using that either have some that are not glass, that are not stainless steel or aluminum.
Like plastic bags, plastic saran bags. Wrap.
Right. Yeah, and saran wrap actually has an interesting history. So
saran being a brand, but they're all plastic wraps.
Wrap. Sure. Yeah. So what happened was in World War II, they had to send lots of rare and precious materials, including aluminum, to the war effort. And so people had been using aluminum foil and other things for food preservation in the kitchen, and they needed an alternative. And the plastic industry went to women's magazines and began advertising this new wonderful material called plastic wrap, and saran wrap was the brand. And they even did, you know, home decorating shows with saran wrap so that you could tie bows around your candles and do really beautiful things.
Well, sure. When plastic came, talk about an amazing thing. You could do so much with it. It seemed like such a good idea. And let's not forget Tupperware parties. Oh, boy, that was good, too. But it was a miracle. I mean, all these things could be stored.
Well, what was also a miracle about that was that it was a new marketing method.
Mm-hmm.
So
Oh, boy.
The plastic industry was trying to convince people that this was valuable. And so they targeted women in particular. And so it's not it will be justice if women and others in the kitchen take back the kitchen as a first bulwark against the plastics, which are poisoning the planet and poisoning us.
So explain how it's so bad, basically.
Well,
just quantity?
Quantity is not a bad place to start, but I'm going to start at the beginning. I mentioned that they're made out of fossil fuels. So we're sitting here in Iowa, in Ames, less than 2 miles from the Dakota Access crude oil pipeline, where they're fracking North Dakota and then shipping that crude oil down through Iowa across the Des Moines River, which is the drinking water of Des Moines, our state capital. So the first problem is the drilling and the shipping, the piping of fossil fuels to make these materials is a travesty. It's a destruction of
dangerous.
It's dangerous. Dangerous to our water, dangerous to our health. It's so the first thing is the fossil fuels and how we get them. The second is that these are synthetic chemicals. They are nothing, there's nothing comparable in nature. And so we have fundamentally altered the chemistry of our bodies. These are chemicals that have not existed. There's no way that they reflect how nature does her work.
So as in like radiation, it takes thousands and thousands of years to get rid of it.
Well,
or biodegrade. Or
it's not going to biodegrade. What we know from a lot of the research is that we're actually changing the fossils. We are creating plastic fossils now. And I don't know about you, but the rocks that...
Plastic fossils?
Plastic fossils. They're being... So if you in the ocean, you mentioned that they're in the ocean. They're now in layers of sediment. We're going to be finding them... you know, archaeologists and geologists both are going to be finding these remnants of our culture. And in another
interview... No pottery shards for us, huh?
In another interview, I talked about being an archaeologist in my previous career and how extraordinary the things we found out the pueblos of the Southwest. And, you know, we are living on some of the most wonderful land that was inhabited by many tribes. The Ocheti Shakoi, or Sioux, roamed this area, the Iowa.
Some of the most fertile land on the planet, right here.
And they left their objects behind. You can find an arrowhead, and you can go into lots of antique stores and find arrowheads, these extraordinary things that say imaginative, talented, skilled people lived here. And what are we going to think when we find the styrofoam cup lid in our fossil in the garbage bin?
What is this, right?
Or the plastic bag. You know, that these are things that we're going to leave for future generations. So the third thing, so not only what we make, but then the pure quantity of them and how long they last. One scientist has said that we will have more plastic in the ocean than plankton by whatever the year is coming up. And fish can't tell the difference between plankton and plastic, the microplastic.
Because in some cases, it doesn't stay as a cup or a plastic. It does kind of break down into small little bits.
That's right.
Ah.
Exactly.
Was that planned for, or people that say, "Oh, it's going to break down into small bits. You don't have to worry about it." But I think we maybe should worry about it.
Yeah, hand them more sea salt.
Uh-huh. Sea salt.
Okay. Right. You don't get that sea salt and look at it and go, "Oh, I see that plastic in there." You don't notice it.
It's teeny tiny.
It's teeny tiny. And then the next problem with it are the toxic chemicals that actually interfere with our hormones. So we raised babies on those sippy cups that had these synthetic chemicals in them, like BPA and phthalates.
With some orange juice or some apple juice in there, an acidic sort of thing.
Right.
Not good.
And leached out. Or if they got warm, if they were sitting in the sun, or, you know, they would leach out, and babies were given a much higher dose of a chemical that interferes with hormones that govern puberty, that govern hunger. So there are things called obesogens that actually interfere with the hormones that signal that we're hungry or not hungry. And it looks like one factor among many of our problems with obesity, certainly a kitchen-related problem, has to do with some of these chemicals that are found in
You mean it's
like
not
plastic.
Just sheer willpower?
It's not just sheer willpower. It's the way that we have designed our life. And then the final problem is the one that we looped into the conversation earlier, which is there's no away. Most of these things do not biodegrade in any kind of meaningful time frame and can last.
Right. Disposable is a big misnomer in this case then.
Well, disposable is, you know, the old adage, there's no away. So we need to look at the way we live our lives with some care. You know, archaeologists talk about the personal toolkit. So what did every Native American in the desert Southwest carry with him or her? You know? And what do people carry in your purse now? If you go through my purse, it's almost the same thing with that the two of you carry. You know, we're going to have our driver's license. We're going to have money. We're going to have credit cards.
All which is made out of plastic.
Yeah. But I also carry a bamboo spoon, fork, and knife so that I don't have to use.
Mine's metal.
Good. Wonderful. So there are things like that that we can begin to even think through our personal toolkit as well as, you know, the family toolkit. What's in your kitchen? Go through like a detective or an archaeologist and ask, is this good for me, good for the planet, and good for future generations?
Well, you know, since I, at your direction, read the recent National Geographic article on the ubiquitous plastics on the planet, it was really me who's been recycling for years, you know, it was alarming. And so now I'm looking at like, okay, I can use aluminum foil instead of plastic wrap. I have been using more and more, of course, glass dishes for, you know, food containers. What other adjustments can we? Oh, packaging. Tell us about packaging.
You know, packaging is my personal Waterloo. And it is very difficult when you're buying in bulk, certain kinds of things, cheese. And cheese is the biggest problem that I have.
And even the really good cheeses, any serious cheese eater knows not to wrap your cheese in plastic, but almost all the cheeses you buy anywhere are cryovac.
Right. So it's there are things that we're going to have to put pressure on manufacturers and food makers to get rid of some of those. To the extent that I can, I make choices where I buy foods that are not wrapped in plastic. So the only garbage service that I've got at my house is a recycling service with, and 99% of our recycling is paper. We've done our best to get rid of plastics everywhere we can. So I take paper, I take cloth bags to the grocery store. In my purse sitting next to me, I have a very lightweight parachute cloth kind of bag, so it doesn't take up any space in my purse. I look carefully if I've got an alternative between buying a glass container of mustard or a plastic one. So the squeeze bottle versus the glass jar. I buy the glass jar every time. Glass can be made into glass, can be made into glass, can be made into glass.
And it doesn't leach.
It doesn't leach. It's pretty.
Nothing migrates out of the glass. It's pretty safe.
Yeah, it's very safe. To the extent
except that it breaks.
It breaks, which is one of the reasons that plastics have been so revered.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a very few occasions when you might want something that's not breakable. So some of the silicone.
Silicone is okay.
Silicone's okay.
I have a lot of silicone things in the kitchen.
That's not plastic? What's silicone?
It's not plastic.
Made out?
What is it?
It's made out of silicone.
Sand.
It's, yeah.
Oh. Huh.
I believe it's. I don't quote me on that, but I believe that it is.
Well, glass is also made out of silicone then, right?
Silica. Yeah, the silica.
Okay.
And I had actually talked to one of the great scientists who wrote the book on endocrine disruption, Pete Myers, about silicone because a bunch of plastic devices, prosthetics and things like that were made out of silicone. External.
We're not talking silicone breast implants.
No. I don't know the safety on those, but there have been quite a few debates on what's inside those. Nevertheless, they are more stable and less toxic for baking and those kinds of things.
I have a number. Like, my favorite article, which I've had for more than 20 years, are they're called Silpat. They're made in France, but they're silicone baking sheets. So you lay them on the baking pan, and yep. things don't stick.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not talking Tupperware here, or
no,
or,
no.
Wait, what's the Teflon? Not Teflon either.
Teflon is a toxic chemical, and it's especially dangerous with extreme heat,
which is
like
unfortunate.
The high sauté,
because that's where they put it on the extreme heat pans. There you go.
And here's the problem: people in the know are no longer buying Teflon. And that means that they're all going to Goodwill and Salvation Army,
yes.
which means that people who are living in poverty are more likely to be getting a hit of a chemical that's toxic. So one of as wealthier people are, upgrading to safer materials, we're seeing that this is actually a problem of inequity. Teflon should not be sold. There are other materials. High-grade ceramic finishes can be so smooth that they stick less. We're seeing ceramic finishes in non-stick wear now. And then the last thing that I want to mention is if you're using a microfiber dishcloth, do not do it.
Huh.
The microfibers are the ones that break down, and they're going to be flushed down the drain and then be in the waterways. So the water filtration systems are not getting out those microfibers from microfiber sheets, microfiber dishcloths, or fleece. And you mentioned recycling earlier, and recycling is not the answer for your Coke bottles. Partly because they are not made into a new Coke bottle. They are made into these microfibers and fleece, which then end up back in your salt.
Plastics. This is KHOI, and you're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking to Carolyn Rathsenberger about plastics. Plastics have sort of started out as a really, really good idea, but come to find out that they don't go away. And they're showing up in the darndest places and creating all sorts of problems. Carolyn, you mentioned a little bit before we took the break here, about Coke bottles being recycled, but they're not really being recycled. Can you restate that?
Yeah. So the plastic Coke bottles, and I shouldn't say Coke. Soda bottles, pop or soda.
Or even water bottles, plastic bottles.
Plastic disposable one-use bottles are discarded or recycled, and then recycled and made into another plastic form. So they're being added as the fiber fill to winter coats. They are going into microfiber cloth. So I saw at a store microfiber sheets and microfiber fleece. So if you touch it,
it's soft.
But if you touch it, it almost feels a little bit sticky. It doesn't feel like cotton or silk or wool, something that is a natural fiber.
Biodegradable.
Yeah, those are all biodegradable. But the microfibers don't break down very easily, except when you wash them, and those microfibers slough off and then are carried in the water. So the point is there are alternatives to plastic bottles. The plastic bottles, whether they're for repeated water use or if they are the one-off use. So you buy a beverage, whether it's water or some kind of pop. Almost all of those will also come in aluminum cans. And the reason for buying them in aluminum is because an aluminum can be made into another aluminum can, into another aluminum can indefinitely.
And it also does not migrate into the soda that you are drinking out of that.
Right.
Yeah.
So so much of the beverages, you can buy glass, you can buy aluminum. And aluminum is also lightweight and
doesn't break.
So if you have a choice, please buy something that does not end up polluting yourself or your child or the planet.
We talked about last week or the week before, I don't remember, we talked about the wine in the aluminum can.
There we go.
I'm happy to report I have seen wine in aluminum cans in stores in Ames.
There you go. There you go. And it wasn't bad either. So there we go.
And most wine is in a glass.
Yeah.
It's in glass.
Start out with.
You know, it's not a problem for little children to break the bottle. You know, so you're expected to be an adult.
Yeah. But that's for good. Picnics, aluminum is nice because it doesn't weigh as much to carry and it also doesn't break.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Straws. Speaking of drinking things.
Oh, boy.
A big to-do over how many plastic straws. And again, now that you've mentioned archaeology,
plastic Q-tips, too.
I see layers and layers of this stuff. Yes, we will be remembered by our plastic. What about straws?
I have to tell a funny story about this.
Oh, good.
So there's a fabulous farmer out in Nebraska named David Vetter.
Oh.
And I was invited to give a talk at their big annual festival on their farm. And so I went out and I spent the night in the little tiny town in the middle of nowhere, Nebraska. We are talking nowhere. And I couldn't figure out where to eat. There was a bowling alley, and it was, of course, prime rib night, Friday night, the night before the big talk on Saturday. And I go in, and an exceptionally surly waitress, who could not have been 17, waited on me.
Oh, good.
And I ordered my beverage, and she snarled at me, and I suppose you want a straw. I said, no, I don't. In fact, I'll throw my body across the table if you even think about bringing me a straw. And she looked at me baffled, and she said,
what planet are you
why,
on?
Why don't you want a straw? And I said, because, they're made out of petroleum, and they're going to last forever, and it's a waste of that oil. It's, the bones of dinosaurs being made. And I looked at her and said, and why were you so hostile about the straw? What is it that you saw? She said, I love wildlife. And we throw out all those straws at the back of the bowling alley, and we leave the dumpster open because we keep throwing more garbage in. And the raccoons and the others get into the garbage, and they chew on the straws until they can get the sweet out of them. And because we primarily use straws for the sugared iced tea and the Coke and the Sprite, And so those wild creatures are changing their chemistry, their biology, by chewing on our remnants.
And she knew about this.
And she said, I want to be
Excellent.
A wildlife biologist,
Aww.
A wildlife veterinarian. And I'll tell you, the tip that I left in the middle of nowhere, Nebraska, at the bowling alley that night was significant.
Let's send her to college, right?
Let's send this woman to college.
Right.
Yeah.
What? Isn't that amazing? A human response, as you said, in the middle of – they probably don't think of themselves as in the middle of nowhere, as if we're talking here
yes,
in the
I
middle
think people,
of Iowa.
People talk about us, that our flyover communities. I say to them, you just keep flying over. We're doing just
we're doing fine
here.
Well, I think compared to most of my friends, I do live in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
I live in a small town in the middle of nowhere.
Yes,
but,
you do. Yes, you do.
But does not mean that we are ignorant here, for goodness sake.
So let me raise the issue of straws in a more concrete way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have no business using things that are purely for that kind of ridiculous convenience when it is really destructive. And it seems to me that any restaurant that has a policy of giving a plastic straw to anyone is a bad business. First of all, it's a labor issue. You've got to think of one more thing, and then you've got to clear it off the table. It's a garbage problem. In Ames, we incinerate our garbage, and those plastics are part of the formation of the toxic chemicals that come out of the – so you're going to be breathing your straw. And they have to clear that straw away. There is nothing good about this. And
it's not necessary.
It is not necessary. And it incenses me. So we went out to eat at a wonderful restaurant here in Ames, and they just put the straws in the drinks. And before I'd gotten there, two of my friends had sat down and gotten their straws. And I was livid, and they didn't want to make a fuss. But if we don't start making a fuss.
Yes, I've seen it. Carolyn, when she orders at a restaurant, she always says, no straw or drink stirrer, please.
Because, you know, and then when they put two straws in to mark your drink versus somebody else's drink, it's obscene. So, you know, unless we start making a fuss and demanding that these little things that add up in the world – if we don't stop the straw, where are we going to stop it?
This is the plastic straw. There are, of course, paper straws, which restaurants could use if they have to.
Who has to use a straw? So the only time, as far as I can tell, that anyone should
invalids,
use a straw
right?
is invalids. And
I'm going to bring up something. Rip your floats.
Okay.
I'll see.
I could use a metal straw.
But you can also use a beautiful spoon. Long spoon.
That's true. But there are some drinky concoctions that you go. But anyway, isn't that amazing? Our convenience, just in our habits, that's the hardest thing to break. And the idea that, yes, we have to use a straw, I don't know, maybe that came from the Norman Rockwell vision of the two young lovers drinking out of the same soda, ice cream soda.
Well, I think it probably also came about by the marketing efforts of those people that in the 40s and 50s were selling housewives on the disposable lifestyle.
Disposables.
It's quite a problem. But I think that most people think, oh, this one straw in my drink doesn't matter.
Or this one get the Q-tips that have the cardboard centers.
I don't even know about Q-tips with plastic, but
But you know what? In that National Geographic article, there was a photograph of a tiny little seahorse wrapped around a pink centered Q-tip.
Yes.
It was so...
Oh, ack.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Going back to you're encouraging us to look in our homes for all the plastics. My goodness. We don't even not consider ourselves modern people without plastics, and maybe we should reevaluate what it is to be a modern person.
Yeah, I think to be a modern person now means that you're sick, that you are going to have increasing chronic diseases, that we are shortening our life expectancy because of having filled our world with toxic chemicals, whether and how we produce our food, how we package our food, how we end
up. Read the labels and know what those words mean, too.
And know what those words mean.
So we were going to talk a little bit more about some complicated words. Endocrine disruptor and what was the fat one?
The obesogens.
Obesogens.
What is an endocrine?
And the endocrine system is the system of organs that,
like your lymph nodes,
that manufacture chemicals that send a message to another part of your body. This is the chemical messenger system of our bodies,
including all your hormones, and not just the sexual hormones.
Hormones are what are secreted. Those are the messengers that are secreted by the endocrine system, and the endocrine system and these hormones are the ones that tell us it's time to develop breasts. It's time to become an adult woman. It's time to go into menopause. It tells us, these hormones tell us when we're hungry.
They're not all about gender.
They're not all about gender. No, they regulate body temperature. They help us regulate almost all of our bodily functions. And the problem with these chemicals, and especially the ones in plastics, is that these can either mimic hormones and act like them. They can block the action because they bind to a receptor that the hormone is supposed to go lock into and send the message. It doesn't get to do that. They can do all sorts of interesting things. So our thyroid is part of, regulating our energy level and does all sorts of other things. Chemicals in the environment can interfere with thyroid. And these plastics are one of the big problems with acting like these hormones in this whole system called the endocrine disorder.
We could call this a public health issue quite seriously.
Sure. Plastics are, I would call it a public health debacle.
Oh, my goodness. Is anyone, besides your organization, Carolyn, is anyone else aware of this? Is anyone kind of sending up the alarm?
It's a long-standing alarm. There was a book written in the late 1990s called Our Stolen Future. And it is a landmark book that described what Rachel Carson started out describing with DDT. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the – in Iowa and relevant to this conversation is that a number of pesticides are endocrine disruptors and then plastics. Those are the two biggest classes of endocrine disruptors.
Pesticides and plastics.
Both of them. Both of those are synthetic chemicals. That have interfered with our biochemistry. Now, it's really pretty new science. And the thing that we discovered
in 20 years of science, sort of.
In 2020, Rachel Carson actually started talking about it, about DDT. So we've known some things, but the people who put the puzzle together were the late 1990s. And what was interesting, I believe it was 1996 that Our Stolen Future came out, or 1997, but I think 96.
It's new, but we have had time to work on this.
Yeah. But what's interesting to me about it is that we used to think that toxic chemicals, it was the more you had, the worse it could be. So a little bit of phthalate leaching out into a sippy cup couldn't possibly be a problem. But the thing about hormones is that they operate at these very, very, very tiny doses. And it turns out that these endocrine disruptors, these chemicals that interfere with our hormones.
So you don't need a shovel full to do damage.
In fact, sometimes the smaller the amount, the more it can actually act like the chemical. If you've got too much, the system's already jammed. A lot more doesn't make that much difference. So It's upended how we understand these chemicals, the toxicology of it, and the study of endocrine disruptors has really changed how we think about these chemicals that are basically made out of fossil fuels.
And what part of our government is supposed to be regulating and protecting us?
The primary one is US EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. Uh-huh. But that is currently under the direction of someone who has vowed to protect industry rather than us.
That kind of puts us in a bad
buyer beware.
Here. Right. This is KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was a little tune called The Dill Pickle Rag, and I want to take this opportunity to remind you that pickling is starting this summer, and the first thing that comes out of the garden...
In glass jars, of course.
In glass jars is garlic-scape pickles. Garlic-scapes are coming up this week in my farm. I don't know about your farm, but there's garlic-scapes. They're coming.
And they're so cute.
Yes. Talk about... You pickled some garlic-scapes.
Yes, I would say one thing about when choosing your garlic scapes, smaller is better. The thinner, the smaller the garlic scape, the more tender it is.
Good. So pick some good ones out there. And you can go to khoifm.org, find out more about this station. Go to the Donna Lana Kitchen page there, and we have recipes. There is a recipe for the garlic scape pickles. Yes, it is. So... as you're pickling your garlic
scapes. Oh, and a cute thing. If you're pickling the garlic, they twirl into little circles. So pack the jar that you're going to pack them in little circles, because when you take them out, they make a delightful garnish.
Oh.
In a circle or a curlicue.
Think ahead to a delightful pickle plate. There you are. We've been talking about plastics today.
Oh, yeah. We've had one of our really good bummer shows.
Oh, well, this is not a bummer. You just have to find out what
you're doing.
Yes,
we're creating awareness. We're trying to educate ourselves.
And in our studio today is...
Yes, we have Carolyn Raffensperger with the Science Environmental Health Network.
Yes. And if people want to find out more about this subject, Carolyn, where can they go?
Well, there are a number of places that you can go to read about plastics. We have some material on our website at www.s as in science, E for environment, H for health, and N for network, SEHN.org. What you should look for are some of the health studies that the doctor on our staff has done. He's written a book called... Environmental Threats to Healthy Aging. He's written a number of books on reproductive toxicants, one book on reproductive toxicants, one on learning disabilities. And he's written a really interesting book on the ecology of breast cancer. So one of the things, you know, for those of you listening who have breasts, and since we're all mammals, I think we all do, male
at least,
and female.
Oh, it's true.
It turns out that endocrine disruptors, especially for endocrine disruptors can actually lead to cancer. So, and there are some of these same chemicals are actually carcinogenic. So, if you look at the increase in things like breast cancer over the decades, when my mom got married. In the 1950s, one woman in eight got – I'm one woman in 25 got breast cancer, and now the statistic is about one woman in eight.
Oh, my.
That's a little bit of an increase. Yeah.
So something's happened. And if you look at the changes over that time
this
frame –
this is a global statistic, right?
No, it's not.
Oh, it's a U.S. statistic?
It's a U.S. statistic, and it's interesting because – Japan, for instance, women in Japan have a lower breast cancer rate than women in the United States. But the longer they are here, if they come to the United States, the longer they're in the United States, the more their risk of cancer looks like the American women profile.
So it doesn't have to do with genetically being Japanese.
No, it appears to be diet related.
Mm.
And if you look
environmental related.
And if you look at Japanese packaging that have made an art form out of using beautiful leaves and beautiful presentations rather than plastics, in addition to seaweed and soy and the other things that seem to be health protective. But something about the way we live in the United States appears to be carcinogenic.
Mm-hmm. It's time we sort of take a look at what we not only put in our bodies, but my goodness, like you said, there is a lot of plastic in our lives. You mentioned T-handled bags, plastic bags that actually people are making a little bit of a dent in not using so many of, but they are around. They are around. I've heard them referred to actually for decades now as if they're caught in the trees and are flying across the landscape, referred to as witch's bloomers because they kind of flap in the breeze up there. And just not a good thing. We are going to be remembered for our plastics, unfortunately.
So change it.
So we can.
And what I want to see is every single listener to have a much better quality of garbage.
Oh, I think that's a good goal.
How can I get rid of my plastic garbage bags? What on earth can I do?
Well, you know, the problem is we've got what we've got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the goal has to be to change behavior going from this day forward.
Right.
You know, if you've got plastic bags that you've already got, they can be reused for as long as possible.
I'm thinking about the trash can liner. Mm. Oh, I'm going to have to think about that one.
We should.
Yep.
Well, we've got plastic trash cans to start with. Maybe we can just let those guys that empty the trash just empty it and hose it out every now and then. How's that?
Yes, we have to hose them out every now and then anyway. Right?
Let's be creative. We can do this. We can do this.
Well, part of it is starting with composting so that you don't throw certain kinds of things away.
That's right. We do a good bit of that.
And it's really reducing all of your garbage, but also being conscious of where some object has come from and what will happen to it when you are done with it.
I have a nice little plus from composting. Okay, so I have a spot where some of my composting, I just kind of throw it into this bush on the side of my porch. I walk out the kitchen door and toss it over there, and guess who comes and eats it? Besides the chipmunks and the squirrels, a possum! He's so cute. And then last week I read, guess what else possums eat?
Straws.
Ticks. What? Ticks.
Oh, ticks.
Ticks. Yes. So possums are really good at reducing ticks in the environment.
Very good.
Yes. So I've attracted my very own tick eating machine.
So let's reduce, recycle, and be very aware of plastics. Thank you for being with us today, Carolyn. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. I went to a really good concert this past weekend, and I want to put in a plug here for a Midwestern treasure, Hartman Marimba Ensemble.
Does this happen every summer in Ames? We get to hear them?
Yeah,
they
come every June. Matthew Coley has put this group together, and I got to hear them at a really fine concert this past weekend. So if you want to find out more, go to www.heartlandmarimba.com. They played all kinds of stuff.
Oh, this is so cute.
It's lovely. So, marimbas. The Donna Lana Kitchen comes to you every week on Tuesday. support this fine radio station. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering today by Colin Bursack. Eat good food. Enjoy life.